Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. It's a Chevy Power Play. Now get over $8,600 total savings on a 2018 Chevy Silverado 1500 Crew Cab LT, plus an additional $2,500 in competitive owner cash. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and score. Our Friday baseball doubleheader continues. Top of the hour, White Sox hit the road. Lucas Giolito takes the bump to open a series in Tampa against the Rays. Jason and Steve have the call, 6 o'clock. Meanwhile, on the north side, that got a little too close for comfort. Pedro Strop escapes a big jam of the ninth. Cubs return to the win column. Meanwhile, Jose Quintana was pretty good. Throws 6 solid innings. Is he back to being a Buick again, or was he better than that? And Brian Urlacher's entire football life has led up to this tomorrow. Legendary Bears linebacker will join the greatest ever to be enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Plus, is there anything at all that we learned about the Bears after last night's yawner of a preseason opener? And welcome in to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Hope you had a good day, good week, ready for a great weekend. I'm David Kaplan. Panel for today's show from SB Nation Radio, he's our friend Jason Gotch. From Fansided.com and WGN Radio and the White Sox Radio Network, he is Mark Carmen, a white, lifelong White Sox fan, and Seth Gruen, who you can catch in a variety of platforms, including his great podcast. We start with our postcards from camp, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Today, the postcards are sent from Canton, where Brian Urlacher is about to be enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Our Lawrence Holmes joins us from Canton. Lawrence, we both got a chance to watch this guy play for a long, long time, and I thought it was very deserving that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. What's your take on Brian Urlacher's place among all-time Bears linebackers?
I've been asked that a lot down here, Cap, this week, and I tell you, the answer that I've come up with is I believe that he's changed the way that we think about the position of middle linebacker. And a lot of that has to do with Lovie Smith as well and understanding that marriage that happened between the two. It's not that middle linebackers in today's NFL are complete bruisers like they were back in the day of Bill George or Dick Butkus, but Urlacher's range, a lot of people talk about it from side to side. I think it's even more impressive the way he used to backpedal, the way that he ended up breaking up passes, intercepting passes down the deep middle third of the field. And because of that, we see a more athletic and guy playing the position of middle linebacker. So I think that that's his lasting legacy. And it's great because if you line him up with the guy that he's going to be going into the Hall of Fame with, in Ray Lewis, they kind of are the two ends of the spectrum on what a middle linebacker was in the 2000s.
Interesting for me, Lawrence, having gotten to know Brian a little bit and to see where he wouldn't mention the name Phil Emery. He would say the Bears GM. He would never mention him by name. And to see the way that they've rebuilt the relationship, and he's speaking to the team last night. You cover this team very closely. You host the pre and the post. What's your take on Brian now being back in the fold?
Well, I think it was important. It almost never ends well with a lot of guys at the end of careers because you're trying to figure out if they have any actual on-the-field value. But now you're talking about a guy that you were pretty sure was going to find his way down here to Canton, Ohio. And the fact that he is back in the fold is great. And, Cap, you saw it last night. When the rest of the Hall of Famers got introduced, they all walked down the middle. They took in their glory. They've earned it. They've deserved that. Brian slapped 5 with every Bears player. And you know, the roster's at 90 right now. So he used his time to go down the line. And I believe he gave a hug to Sherrick McManus because I think that's the last teammate that he has on the team. But the fact that he got to speak with the team, he seems to really like Mitchell Trubisky. It's a step forward in post-Bears relationship life. And I think that you can't have a better way to sell your franchise than to have a Hall of Famer speak highly about it instead of not wanting to have anything to do with you or the franchise.
Last one. What do you think the scene will be like tomorrow night at 6 o'clock when they have this ceremony. I'm expecting a ton of Bear fans because Bear fans travel very well. They were just there to play the Hall of Fame game. What do you think that environment will be like from a Chicago perspective?
Cap, they're here. I was in the museum a little earlier this afternoon, and they're all over the place. The locker is now set up. Brian's locker is now set up. All of the enshrinees are ready to go. But they're here. The Bears fans travel big time. I remember even back in the Super Bowl when you saw the Colts fans there, it felt like Bears fans were outnumbered them 10-1. So expect there to be a great big reception for Brian Urlacher tomorrow. I'm curious about how long he's going to go on the speech. I ran into him last night on the sideline, and he said, look, they only give me 15 minutes. I expect Brian Urlacher to go under on his speech, and I expect Ray Lewis to go way over the 15 minutes that he's allowed to speak.
Well, have fun. Enjoy this. It's pretty cool to see one of the guys that we got to cover going into the Hall of Fame. So have fun with this. All right, Lawrence?
Cap, thank you. I appreciate the time.
You got it. Have a good weekend. There you go. So Brian Urlacher goes in. This guy was an amazing, amazing football player. What was your take on Brian Urlacher and the pantheon of great Bears?
I mean, quintessential Bear, all that, but I still like to have the argument. 1985. Is he starting over Mike Singletary?
Yes.
Well, really?
No, you think so? I don't think he's a better football player.
Yeah, but come on. I don't think he is. And then, is he better than Otis? Is he better than Wilbur? Like, there's
yes.
Just,
don't forget.
I don't. That those guys were incredible. They were just that was the top for me. Yeah, as great as Urlacher, those three are still at the top of my in my lifetime.
Look, I measure greatness by championships first and foremost, and I think that's a fair metric. And I think, you know, under those circumstances, you give the nod to Mike Singletary. But Lawrence took the words right out of my mouth. You can't write the history of the position without mentioning Brian Urlacher and what he was able to do in the secondary and his ability to cover guys 10, 15, 20, 25 yards down the field. I'll add this, and particularly during that 2006 season, his ability to create fumbles, too, was a transcendent skill that I think is replicated now across the NFL, across multiple positions.
And that's what made him such a special player. He could play the middle linebacker position. He could drop in coverage almost like a safety when he played in college. So he is one of those unique type players just because of his athletic ability. I don't know if I agree that he's better than all these guys on the 85 Bears. They were really good, too. He's in the team photo, but certainly a worthy Hall of Famer.
Don't forget, they started him out at outside linebacker, and he was terrible. It wasn't until they moved him inside that he came into his own. But, you know, in football,
I don't know if I'd say he was terrible.
He was not good.
He didn't like the position.
Yeah, and look, he would not have been a Hall of Fame outside linebacker.
Probably not.
And look, I think it's interesting. I think football, when it comes to greatness, is about a confluence of circumstances. And I even believe that with Tom Brady, wherein Brian Urlacher was given an opportunity to do something different because they ran, well, I guess under Lovie Smith, that cover too. And those were really his shining years. Without that system, he might have been asked to do more of the things that Ray Lewis does and play closer to the line of scrimmage and might have been known more as that
funny.
Side-to-side
I asked
guy.
Ron Rivera, who played on that great 85 team. He said, Singletary missed a game. He goes, so I moved over to middle linebacker. He said, I make 23 tackles. He goes, I was never blocked. He said, I had Hampton, Dent, Perry, McMichael. He said, I'm not denigrating at all what Mike Singletary did. He goes, we were never blocked.
Tommy Harris was an all-pro, too. I mean, in
he
his
wasn't
heyday,
like he, that 85 team.
But he was pretty damn
That's
good.
That's one guy.
And you know, they had some Tank Johnson during the Brian Urlacher.
Oh, please don't compare Tank Johnson and Tommy Harris
I'm not,
to the 85
All I'm saying
Bears.
Is that front four certainly allowed Brian Urlacher to roam free a lot.
If you talk to the 85 Bears, the front four, if you talk to Dan Hampton, you talk to Steven Michael, they will say that they made it awful easy for Mike Singletary to back up your point. However, he still is a Hall of Fame linebacker.
Yeah, he's a great player.
So,
but if I had to draft one of the two sitting on the board, I'm taking Urlacher every time.
Well, in today's NFL, that makes sense.
I personally would take Mike. Maybe I'm a little bit still biased towards the childhood of my Baron there. I don't know. It's a very, very tough choice right there. And to your point, Seth, I mean, the only other time in Bears history that they've actually been to the Super Bowl other than that team was with Brian Urlacher. So, I mean, there's something to be said for that, too.
And I don't think that's necessarily an indictment on Singletary's greatness either. It's just the reality of where the league's at. It's a more passing league. There are fewer plays at the line of scrimmage. Well, you know, Urlacher, as we've articulated for the past several minutes, is better in the secondary. So, of course, you'd take it.
All right, here's our Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Who is the greatest linebacker in Chicago Bears history? Dick Butkus, Singletary, Urlacher. Go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote and weigh in. Right now you see it tabulating there.
No brainer.
It's Butkus over Urlacher right now. Look, Butkus redefined the position, but the game, as you said, has changed, gotten faster, more athletic. For me, it's Butkus. Then I would go Urlacher, then Singletary.
Yeah, and I don't think that Singletary necessarily has that associated with him. I don't necessarily think he changed the way the position is played. Urlacher certainly did do that. Who was the more impactful player? I mean, both played on two great defenses.
Both were great players.
Toss-up.
You can't compare the two. Yeah. Go ahead.
The Jose Quintana automobile comparisons are changing again. He strikes out 6 in 6 innings as the Cubs get back in the win column. Can Q keep it up? Speaking of Quintana, Eloy Jimenez, he is tearing it up at AAA. Fans keep telling Rick Hahn, we want to see him in the majors soon. Hahn says he needs to consult his plan.
Crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world.
Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move? I think Pack wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
That was a close one today at Wrigley. Look at this play by David Bodie. Great tag by Victor Caratini. Corey Spangenberg out at the plate in the ninth. Would have tied the ball game. Look, I think Caratini did a great job, but the play by Bodie, he got rid of that ball so fast. It was phenomenal. And then ball game over on a slider from Pedro Strop.
You're a big tennis guy, Cap. If you go back to that Bodie play, the key to that play, it was his feet. Right before the pitch, he does a split step so he can move either which way. He's on his toes. That's part of the reason why he was able to get there and get rid of it so quickly. Bodie, I'm telling you right now, played some high school tennis or something. That was excellent form.
Well done. That was a really good drop shot that they made there.
Great analysis there.
There was an ounce of tennis in Bodie's and the Cub win today. There you go, buddy. I wanted to get that in there.
Look, again, not to gush too much over it, but when Theo Epstein got here, he talked about standardizing the way we play throughout the system and having backups understand the fundamentals. And really, I hate to say it, but kind of mirroring the way the Cardinals have operated over the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. And that's proof there. I don't necessarily think that the casual baseball fan recognizes that, but you know, that's as much representative of the great rebuild as Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant and all those other guys are.
And that was an important victory. You don't want to lose two of the first two games of the four-game series to a team like San Diego, who stinks. And I think the difference for the Cubs this year than last year, the Brewers are a lot better. They're not going to go away. So there's some pressure on the Cubs. I mean, and they've got some issues. Is the bullpen going to be healthy? Is the rotation going to hold up? I mean, what's the status of Chris Bryant? They've had a lot of injuries. So I really think they're in a battle here down the stretch. I think they win the division, but I don't think Milwaukee's going to go away. It's going to be a tough battle.
Talk about Javier Baez, who was absolutely magnificent again today. Had the game-winning hit, which was the early home run, gave the Cubs the lead, and they would end up winning the ballgame, and that turns into the game-winning hit. But I thought the play he made firing the ball to the plate to get an out was key. The triple with the amazing slide right here in the ninth or the eighth inning. I mean, that was just a ridiculously good play.
He's an unbelievable athlete. It's just, no, you cannot, that just... First of all, that play, he started. He knew he was going for the triple early. He had got a tremendous break out of the Bronx. And then nobody could just imitate and do that, even though Contreras did it last night. But nobody looks like him doing it. He's just ridiculous.
Look, I've loved Javi Baez for a long time. I've always thought he had MVP-type potential. We're seeing that crystallize this year. But
I never thought that.
I don't know. I honestly did. Because, again, and I've said this before, he does
he was a bust.
But he does so many things for you.
I didn't think he was going to be winning an MVP. No, neither did you.
To his credit, Jim Bowden, if you go back, Jim Bowden wrote an article in 2014 and said the 2019 National League MVP will be Javier Baez.
Okay, look, good for him, but I haven't heard that from anybody else.
When you look at Baez, and I know there might be better players, Manny Machado might be a better player, But I don't know that there's a player in baseball that can do more things for you. When you talk about what he's able to do on the base paths with the speed, in the field, the throws, you know, the stealing away base hits, obviously can change the game at the plate. He's a special player. And to me, he's every bit as important to this ball club as Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant, even though I know they're more so the leaders. Baez just, it seems phenomenal. Every night he's doing something for you.
Yes, Cappy?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think one thing about Baez is he does do so many things well. But I'm with Mark. I never thought he'd be the MVP. I mean, when he came up in 2014, he couldn't hit anything. Right. And he struggled, guys, but I mean, he really has developed.
Especially Mark, rush to judge.
But the play,
all right, to the White Sox.
Hold on a second. You said for a zillion years, he's not a Theo guy, they're going to deal him. That was the narrative when the whole regime came. He's not. They didn't draft him. He's not a Theo guy. They quickly changed their mind on that. Okay, now you can do your job.
All right, to the White Sox. They are in Tampa tonight to open a series with the Rays. All eyes, though, continue to be on AAA Charlotte, where Eloy Jimenez is tearing the league up. Some fans want Jimenez in the majors ASAP, but Rick Hahn says his team has a plan. Last night at the White Sox Talk podcast live taping at Reggie's, Sox GM explained his club's reasoning.
There's a plan in place. There's a plan that we're committed to as an organization that going back almost 18 months or 2 years, whatever it's been now, we knew there were going to be hard parts along the way. And just because we've gotten to what was anticipated to be and has fulfilled being one of the more difficult stages of this, isn't a reason to deviate from it now. So far, it's working. Part of the angst you feel or hear from fans about wanting to see these guys at the big league level is an indication that it's actually working. The guy we traded for is doing so damn well that we're idiots now for not bringing them up. So that's part
like it.
That's all part of this. We knew this was coming. We have to remain strong through this because the payoff at the end is too great if we do it the right way.
A lot of credit, man, because you could throw meat to the starving animals, the fans who want to see him, and rightly so. But you don't throw a cookie out there. You stay loyal to your plan.
I think it's pretty obvious that if they were going to be in a position to win next year, I think they would bring him up now to get him seasoning and get him ready to roll.
Cubs didn't bring Brian up for that reason.
I don't agree with that.
Well, hold on a second. If the Cubs were not in a position to win at that point, they didn't know they were going to be in a position when they didn't know they were getting John Lester at that point. The White Sox right now are a team that's, what, 38-70. You can't assume they're going to win next year. So to keep another year of control and to bring out next year, I think that's what they're going to do. I don't expect to see it.
I don't. Rick Hahn maintained from the start how well the major league club is doing is not going to affect the individual player plans of these prospects.
All right, quickly. Meanwhile, the latest from Ohio State, where Urban Meyer was placed on administrative leave earlier this week. Buckeyes head coach released a statement today apologizing for how he handled questions at Big Ten Media Day. But he maintains he followed the proper protocols when reporting domestic violence regarding his former wide receiver coach, Zach Smith. Your thoughts, because I know you would not fire him.
Based on if that is true, he should not be fired. If he reported the incident to the proper authorities, plus Ohio is a zero-tolerance domestic violence state. That means that the wife in this situation would not even have to agree to testify against Zach Smith. If the police come and they think something happened, he's automatically charged. So with that being known out there, if he really reported it, Urban Meyer shouldn't be fired. He's not the domestic abuser. Why should he be fired?
This cap is an institutional problem. Zach Smith's a scumbag. We know that. I saw the pictures. I'm sure everybody sitting here did. But there are legal hurdles that you have to clear before you fire somebody. There are realities that, quite frankly, a lot of lawyers have created that you can't just outright fire somebody, especially when charges aren't filed. Do I think Urban Meyer could have done more? Probably. But as Jason said, if he went through the proper channels and followed a protocol that was in place, that was created probably by lawyers who represent that university in some way, shape, or form, it's hard to argue against it.
I, I just see a guy's, I did this right, I did that wrong. I'm sorry I did that wrong, I did this wrong. You want that guy?
Well, he's apologizing for lying at media days.
Yeah.
That's what he apologized
for.
But
that's a fairly, you're standing up, and you know this is going on, and you represented yourself, and you lied. I'd say that's pretty significant, right? So do you want that? Do you want him representing your university, as great of a football coach as that he is? I would think.
That gets him suspended. Because you know why?
Yeah.
He's 6-0 against Michigan, and he's lost three Big Ten games in 6 years.
So another coach isn't getting the benefit of this investigation.
Is not covering up the incident.
All right, we've got to take a timeout. We'd love to keep doing this. Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, and Martin Truex Jr. have dominated NASCAR this year, but Erik Jones could be a name that dominates the Cup Series for years to come. 22-year-old will join me next, talk about winning at Daytona and what happened to that ridiculous mullet.
Join NBC Sports Chicago at Wrigley this summer for Authentic Fan Nights, featuring free giveaways, cheer cards, and live broadcasts in Gallagher Way before the game. For more information, including dates, visit NBCSportsChicago.com/CubsAF.
Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, and Martin Truex Jr. have been dominating NASCAR's Cup Series, but look out for the young guns, including 22-year-old Erik Jones, who picked up his first career Cup Series win just last month. Jones joins us on the hotline on Sports Talk Live. All right, Erik, let's get right to the biggest controversy in NASCAR. Why did you cut off that phenomenal mullet? Hey, man, that was a good luck charm.
I had to take some pictures for a new sponsor, and I probably wasn't going to keep it forever, so I had to get more of a look of what I look like, I guess, on a normal basis. But it might come back someday.
It's always cool to get your first win. How much cooler, though, is it to get your first victory at Daytona?
It was special. I mean, you know, number one, your first Cup win is always a pretty good feeling. And then, you know, to do it at Daytona as a driver, that's a place you want to win a race at some point. And you know, Daytona is just a place as a kid growing up I was always wanting to win a race at. So to do it there was definitely a good feeling.
Your teammate Kyle Busch has been one of the most dominant drivers this year. How big has Kyle been as an influence to you in your career?
Yeah, I mean, he's been huge for sure. You know, I started out with Kyle in the Truck Series, and then moving up into the Xfinity Series with KGR. You know, they've been a big part of my career of you know, giving me my Xfinity shots, and then moving up into the Cup Series this year back with them. So that's you know, that's been a good feeling to stay with, you know, the same team and the same group the whole time. You know, not many drivers get to stay with the same teams for a long time, and I've been with the same group up to this point. So that's you know, that's been pretty cool.
Erik, thanks for the time. Best of luck this weekend. Go get him, kid, at Watkins Glen.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, man.
And that's a wrap for Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. White Sox and Tampa Bay Rays are coming up next. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy this gorgeous weather. We'll see you right back here Monday.